Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, belated Happy New Year to you. You're listening to American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman, Steve Jordahl with American Family News and OneNewsNow.com.
Good morning.
And Dr. Ray Pritchard joining us from Dallas. Ray hosts the program on Tuesdays and Thursdays with us, and we appreciate you listening to American Family Radio. Walker, you were telling me about a story you found on Fox News.
Yeah, this morning I was on Fox News, and I saw a video. They were calling this kid Super Toddler. And it's because a two-year-old boy in Utah, he and his twin brother were playing in their room one morning, and the dresser fell on his brother. And his two-year-old brother and their twins here, and the parents were downstairs or something. And anyways, the parents had surveillance camera or a video in their room, you know, to make sure everything's okay. And so it happened to catch this incident on tape. And the two-year-old brother is trapped under the dresser, and then his twin brother miraculously lifts the dresser. You know, this dresser probably weighs a couple hundred pounds, and the brother pushes the dresser off of his twin. And the video is amazing. I'll post it on our Facebook page. I know it's hard to explain when you're on radio. You can't actually see
I'm watching this video.
Yeah. This is amazing.
Did you see this, Ray?
I'm watching it right now. Right
I haven't
now.
Watched it. I haven't watched it to the point. So you got these twin brothers. They're 2 years old. They live in Utah. They're in their bedroom together just horsing around. No parents are in there. Now, and then the dresser.
It falls over.
It falls over on one of the brothers.
Yeah.
And then the other brother, this is like 2 minutes in now, the dresser's still on top of the one of them, and the other brother's sort of looking around trying to decide what he can do to help, but he doesn't know yet what to do. I guess he's trying to figure out how to leverage. He's looking at his brother. His brother's squirming around down
there.
Really
brilliant.
On the ground. I haven't got to the point where he lifts the dresser off of him yet. How long is that?
He does it fairly quickly, within a minute.
Okay, here he goes. He's lifting.
Amazing. Yeah.
The dad posted this on Facebook, and his dad said, quote, "I've been a little hesitant to post this, but I feel it's not only to bring awareness, but it is also incredible. Quote, we are so grateful for the bond that these twin brothers share." So I know the parents are probably struggling with, do we want to post this or not, you know, because they probably feel guilty for this happening on their watch. But, you know, accidents do happen.
Well, they had a camera in the room, so, yeah. But, you know, like you're saying, you can't, you know, even the brave and the best of parents, and most responsible parents, things happen sometimes.
Well, these are boys, and they're messing around at the dresser like boys do.
Right.
Yeah. And they're starting to crawl in it like boys do, right? I mean, this could have happened with our three kids, you know?
Exactly.
And so you can look at the video. They're just messing around, and then all of a sudden the thing comes over. And as you said, Walker, the one brother is under, the other's kind of looking around, thinking what to do.
He's never been in this situation before. He's trying to figure out what to do.
Mom and dad didn't instruct them on what to do when the dresser falls over.
Walker, y'all are getting ready to have some kids now. Are you just
this changed my perspective. I told y'all I was on Fox. I was actually watching Fox and Friends this morning in my recliner. And when I saw this, I was thinking, I didn't even think about bolting the dresser. Who thinks of bolting their dresser to the wall? But if I have boys or girls,
you'll have one of either.
One of the two. we don't know what we're having yet. But I may be bolting the dresser to my wall.
Yeah.
After this video.
Well, you know, the fact that this two-year-old boy could reason, it took him a couple minutes, Ray. But
he
finally reasoned that, hey, I've got to push this thing up to get my brother out.
Well,
from
at
under
one
here.
Point, he actually crawls up on top of the dresser.
Yeah, his brother probably screamed out at that point saying, what are you doing?
Not very helpful. Yeah,
I have a prediction. Yeah. I have a prediction. In about 20 years, we're going to see these two as a tandem team in the WWE.
That's right.
Hey, all right, Trump will probably hire them as, you know, can-do kids.
There you go.
That's right.
This is what the American spirit's all about, people. We're going to bring jobs back to America.
And evidently, the little boy who was under the cabinet wasn't hurt.
He wasn't, because you could tell he got out and sort of shook it off there. But anyway, that's a
feel good story.
Absolutely. We're talking about did you post that on our Facebook page, Walker?
Yes, I did.
So go to Today's Issues Facebook page and you can watch this video. We've just been discussing about these two twins in Utah, 2-year-olds. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Good morning, Steve Jordahl.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Ray. Good morning, Walker,
Steve.
And everyone out there. Happy New Year.
What's happening, Steve?
Well, top of the page at onenewsnow.com, and you guys were talking a little bit about this before. We have a story about how difficult it's going to be in the process of repealing Obamacare. And also, you will find out a discussion there that we've got a story about the funding of the United Nations. Are we about to get out of funding of the United Nations? So there's that. There's also,
could it be? Could that really happen, Steve?
A lot of people would leap for joy. We have seen so many things we never thought we'd see before.
Right.
I wouldn't put it past anybody. I wouldn't bet on anything right now. We're going to have a poll question up a little bit later, and it's going to have to do, and I don't have the language yet, but you go back in an hour or so, we're going to have a poll there, and it has to do with the way that Donald Trump communicates, Twitter and all that kind of stuff. We're going to have you guys weigh in on whether you think it's a good way to communicate or not.
What do you think, Ray?
Well, I'm all in favor of it. I mean, we get the unfiltered, unvarnished thoughts of the president of the United States. And we've never had this before, right? He's the first president who's really grabbed hold of the social media. So
yeah, but would you say that that's an unqualified endorsement by Rick Richard of this?
No, it's not. But it is. It's more like it is what it is,
okay.
Right?
So you're saying on balance,
it's
a good thing. You think
is he likely to say some crazy stuff on Twitter?
Boy, howdy!
Oh yeah, I bet your life.
I do have one worry though, and he's going to be seeing a lot of classified material, and unless you kind of travel in the circles of those that deal with classified material and stuff that's very secret, you often don't have a sense, I wouldn't anyway, have a sense of what should be classified and what shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And I have a little in the back of my head, there's a little alarm going off that he's going to tweet something that he's seen in a security briefing that he doesn't know is supposed to be classified that's going to put someone in danger.
I would say the question is that a proper form of communication? And as Ray said, I would say it's fair game. But the other question is, will he sometimes say things on there that are inappropriate for the platform? And I would say that's a possibility.
Yeah, but he could almost
a likelihood, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a likelihood, but he could be on a learning curve, so to speak, on that, in the sense that he'll learn that.
Or maybe Kellyanne is going to have to come in and grab the cell phone from his hands.
Well,
and
say, you know,
for the good of the country, Mr. President, go to bed.
You would say, you would say, what I would say, I agree with you, Ray. It is nice to be able to hear from a president, as you use the word, unvarnished thoughts, so they're not filtered through the mainstream media. I think that's the big advantage for him, is he can go straight to the American people with his message, that is Donald Trump, and not have to have it filtered through the mainstream media and then have the American people digest. He likes, you know, it served him well to go straight to the people with the tweeting. I'm not so much concerned with what Steve's talking about, in the sense that I think the guy's smart enough to know.
He may be smart enough to know,
you know, when he's getting.
The discussions that I've heard recently are that when the reason it takes so long to redact all these documents is because there are things that are put in documents or that are said in briefings that there's, like, it could be a date. Or something,
right.
Or
right.
Some figure that doesn't seem
that
on the face of it.
He remembers somewhere and something, but he doesn't remember it was in.
No, he could even remember it from the briefing, but it's on the face of it. It just looks like a fact.
Yes,
it just looks like a fact. But really, when you release that fact, it leads those who know back to who gave the fact, because only that person might have that fact.
Right. Gotcha. I think I'm going to give him credit to this extent. I think he's going to be a smart enough individual with the team he has around him. Somebody's going to say, look, Mr. President, you're going to have to be much more careful with what you say tweeting than you were as a candidate.
Right, I hope so.
And I think he will agree with that. Now, he may not say that publicly, you know, but I think that that will be his manner. But like Ray said, right?
We're not really sure, are we?
We're not really sure. We're not really sure. But I don't think this. I don't think he wants to invite a controversy a week based on something he says that's inaccurate.
No.
Or that's considered borderline, you know, country secrets that people don't need to know about. I just don't think he's that dumb. But he is unpredictable.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it. It's not really a matter of being dumb or smart, because he's a very smart man, right? It's just, as Steve said, maybe you hear something and then you tweet it out, and later you realize, uh-oh, that wasn't in the national interest to make that statement, especially, say, about the Middle East, about Iran, about Israel, yeah, about North Korea, China, something like that. So,
well, here's another part of tweeting that's disadvantageous to you as a human being, but certainly as a president, which could hurt you. Tweeting, and I don't tweet, but a lot of people I know do tweet. Tweeting oftentimes is a instant reaction to news that you hear, or somebody. So you want to give your opinion or your thought on whatever it is, on whatever the subject matter is, and you want to do it quickly because that's what the Twitter world is about. So that is not good advice for that's not a good thing to me for a president to be doing on a regular basis, because a president needs his words go around the world. And so if President Trump, after 8 years, remind yourself it's a new day, it's a new president. But Ray, if President Trump tweets, what I would be more concerned about, or as concerned about what Steve talked about, was if he acts on something emotionally and says something that he then boxes himself in on some kind of international situation where he then feels like, well, I've already said this, so I'm, in order to save face or to be consistent, I'm going to have to follow through with something that I wouldn't have to follow through with had I not already given my thoughts 30 minutes into a conflict between the Ukraine and Russia. So, right. You see what I'm saying?
Well, Ray? I do. And I think his solution will be, I'm going to delete the tweet, you know. but tweets are forever, right, Steve? I mean, you can delete it.
You can delete it, but it's out. Once it's out there, it's out there. Right. That's the thing about the internet. I think
that's what I'm saying. I think he'll be more careful. Go ahead, Steve.
There are several gates. I think every one of us has been in a position where we have either said something we wish we hadn't said in the heat of the moment, or we've caught ourselves before we said something that we shouldn't have said. And I think what you're saying, Tim, is that Twitter is just the perfect medium for shooting unvarnished, ungated thoughts out there.
Which can be good and bad.
Which can be good and bad.
Good and bad. But you don't want your president, none of us do, I think, president shooting from the hip on things of that can lead to war or something like that. That's what I'm saying. And I don't think he's going to do that. But I'm just saying that Twitter Twitter is there for people to react instantaneously to things that that stories maybe are incomplete. And so you want more thoughtfulness.
Well, you know, over the weekend, among his other tweets, he tweeted about CNN has published a new book about him. And then he said, they used the worst possible picture of me. He actually said that on Twitter. I think, and that's okay. That's not a national security issue. He didn't like the picture that CNN used in this new book they're writing about him. I think that kind of stuff is going to continue because Trump has a lot of opinions and he's just going to put them out there. That's, you know, for him to do that, that's one thing. If there's a tweet that says, "Hey, North Korea, missiles arriving in 15 minutes, good luck." Okay, we don't want to see that, right?
Right. You know. Well, he is, Trump is, well, like a lot of people, he's pretty hypersensitive about.
Got a thin skin a little.
Yeah, on how he's, well, he's probably been, you know, he's been in many ways so mistreated by the mainstream media that he, and he's a fighter.
Right.
Now you could argue, well, some of the things that he's criticized for, he's brought on himself, and that would be true too.
Sure.
But I'm just saying that
it's the New York way. You don't let anything pass, right?
Right.
Nothing.
Right. I just got finished reading his book, Art of the Deal. I figured since I'm covering him, we might as well get to know the guy a little bit. And granted, it's self.
Is that 10 years old, Matt?
Oh, it's more.
Okay.
It's probably 15 or 20 years old.
Way before he decided to run for president.
Oh, long, long ago when he was just in the middle of his building his New York empire. And granted, the stories in that book are self-selected, and they make him look good, and there may be things that he didn't write about. But one thing is really clear. It goes over the way that he governs. He picks people that he respects, and he lets them do their job. He will go after the best, even and specifically if it's a competition, one of his competitors he'll hire away. But he does seem to want to defend himself and has a hard time letting certain things go that you and I might say was better if he just had let it drop. But he doesn't tend to do that and has never.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We have a Facebook page for Today's Issues on AFR that Walker's keeping updated and posting the stories that we talk about here on the program. Steve Jordahl with us. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Dr. Ray Pritchard. Walker, what you got there?
Well, I was going to give a shout-out. Eric, who's a police patrolman in Mississippi, commented on our Facebook live feed and said he was listening while on patrol in his vehicle from Facebook. So that's encouraging, and I thanked Eric for his service. So if you want to watch on the Today's Issues Facebook page, you can go to our page and watch live. But we were speaking about Trump, you know, tweeting and making comments like that. Well, over the New Year break, actually yesterday, Trump tweeted about Chicago and the murder rate there. He tweeted, "Chicago murder rate is record-setting, 4,331 shooting victims with 762 murders in 2016. If mayor can't do it, he must ask for federal help."
You mean if the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel,
right,
can't do anything to stop this, epidemic in Chicago, that the federal government, he needs to ask the federal government to step in to help?
Yeah, that's what he said. And I don't know, this is one of those things you wonder if he thought through this or if he sought advice on this before he sent this out. Because that sounds like something that a Democratic president would say. Is, well, let the federal government come in and fix it, when we all know that the federal government usually doesn't fix much anything.
Right, right. Let me ask you this, Ray. You haven't lived in Chicago for 20 years, and you told us a couple of months ago, I think it was, your conversation with a police officer or someone who knows.
I was talking with a Chicago policeman. A young fella.
You go back there a couple, right, three times a year for meetings and such, and to visit with friends.
And I was preaching in Chicago back in September. And after the service, young man came up and introduced himself. And he's a Chicago policeman. And I mean, maybe 30, 32, 33, something like that. And strong and tough and well-built. I mean, he looked the part of a Chicago cop. And a strong Christian. And I ask him, so we've heard all these stories about how bad it is in Chicago. What's the truth? And he said, it's worse than you've been told. And I said, how so? He said, it's not just out of control, but this young officer said, we've got good men leaving, good police officers who are leaving the force because they're not being allowed to do their job. And he said, there are just certain parts of the city we will not go into, because you're not just risking your life. That's always true when you're a police officer, but you're risking your career, your reputation. Anything you do is going to be turned against you, and you don't feel like the people above you have your back. And so he said, what you're hearing about these so-called, the areas where the gangs rule, he said, it's true that officers now, They just will not go in there because they're not afraid of the danger from the gangs, but they're afraid that if they have to intervene and do something, they will not be backed up, will be destroyed in the press, and nobody's going to have their back. And he said, it's an awful situation. Good officers are leaving the police force. And so I think it is truly as bad in Chicago as we have been told, and maybe even worse. It's hard to believe, but more people killed in Chicago last year than in New York and L.A. put together.
And New York and L.A. are larger cities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're talking about this in large part because 60 Minutes on CBS did a show about this over the weekend. And I culled some statistics that back up what you're saying, Ray. In this is from CBS. They said this. In August of 2015, the police officers in Chicago made 49,000 contacts or stops and inquiries. 49,000 calls they answered in Chicago. In August of 2016, 8,800, down 80%.
Whoa.
80% less policing in 1 year because the police, like you're saying, Ray, they just don't go there anymore.
So no-go zones, Ray.
Well, you think about it. You drop from 49,000 stops, let's say, to 8,000. We shouldn't be surprised then. What are you saying to the gangs? You're saying basically you can get away with murder.
Yeah.
And they do.
And they are. Walker, you have friends who are also police officers.
Yeah.
So part of policing is patrolling.
You're supposed to be proactive.
You also want to be visible,
right,
in the communities. So you want to see police cars driving up and down streets.
Yeah.
You want to see blue lights occasionally pulling people over and those right. kinds of things. But what you have going on in a place like Chicago, you've taken that fear away from the bad guys, and they feel unencumbered,
right.
And they know that the cops aren't going to bother them because of the reasons we've mentioned.
Yeah.
So then you turn neighborhoods, which I guess expand out neighborhoods, communities, whole areas of a city, into gang operated places.
Yeah.
You go from
proactive policing, which we traditionally have had, to reactive policing, where cops they honestly are fearful to get in a conflict because of what the media and Black Lives Matter.
They know their life will be over in an instant.
Right. So what they're thinking in their mind is, most of them are thinking, why would I go out and look for criminals and criminal activity to possibly get in a conflict that may ruin my life, ruin my career, when I can just sit and wait on 911 calls and be reactive?
Law and order is gone. It's broken down. It's chaos.
In a lot of major cities.
In Chicago in particular.
In Chicago.
Yeah, like the New York.
In Chicago.
One prime example is the New York City stop and frisk rule that the police followed is, if police see or feel something suspicious.
Do they still
suspicious.
Do that now? They did under the Giuliani administration.
They stopped it, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they stopped that. But Chicago.
It
yeah, it worked, exactly. And Chicago and these other cities need that because most likely when cops have a sense that something is wrong or something is going on illegal, they're most of the time right, and we need to allow them that room.
Ironically, and I would say sadly ironically, the very places where the cops are accused of, I guess, profiling or systematic racism are the places that are going to become the no-go zones and the war zones because right. police are not able to do their jobs in these communities. Well, folks, thanks for listening to American Family Radio. Stay tuned for the Bible teaching program of Dr. Alistair Begg. Then the news, then on with your day here on AFR. Take care, everybody.